You're listening to A Light at the Other Side, where we're sharing stories of resilience, healing, and hope. We share the experiences of adoptees, domestic violence survivors, military veterans, and more, so some episodes may contain potentially triggering accounts of trauma. To fully appreciate the light, we must sometimes peer into the dark. On today's show, we're going to view genealogy and genealogical research through the lens of the adoptee. It's been something I've been diving into in my personal life recently, and I'd like to share my experiences and thoughts. Family trees for climbing, for hanging, for chopping down. The genealogical research journey of an adult adoptee. I lie in bed, awake, staring at the ceiling as I tick down the list of names in my mind. John begat James, who begat William, or was it John again? Frustrated, all the strings connecting my biological relatives cross one another, and I finally fall into a restless sleep. Some may ask, what does it even matter? Humans have been fascinated with genealogical history for basically all of time immemorial. Parents have carefully and dutifully scribed their children's births in the family Bible for centuries. Careful records were kept of marriages, christenings, and deaths going back hundreds of years, even millennia. Human beings are fascinated with our roots. We put on our rose-colored glasses and view our personal histories, seeing cinematic love stories and heroic journeys where mere normalcy and even darker tales exist. It's easy to laugh about the ancestor who was repeatedly arrested for public drunkenness, his rosy cheeks shining in his grinning mugshot photo, but the reality of existing with him was probably hellish for his wife and children. Just because he was remembered as a jovial rascal about town does not mean that carried over to his home life. Living with a drunk is not fun and games. It's miserable. Add to that the legalities of the time that prohibited his wife from divorcing him or even having access to anything like family planning, and is it any wonder we see grainy black and white photos with eight sullen children, an exhausted wife with hair severely pinned back from her gaunt, drawn face, and right in the middle, a cheerful, smiling man. What do those family portraits actually portray? Likewise, it's easy to project darkness onto situations where none may have existed. Poverty didn't automatically ensure misery. Many families lived on the bare necessities of existence and found warmth, tenderness, care, and joy within their modest homes. Most people have access to some level of passed-down lore, family history that has been told to generation after generation, keeping the people in those black and white photos vibrantly alive and near to us. That's where adoptees miss out. Even if an adoptee has been lucky enough to discover their true identity, tracing back genealogical ties can be extraordinarily difficult. Although those of us living now in the age of ancestry, DNA testing, and robust online genealogical research tools have more access than ever before to our biological histories, those resources barely scratch the surface of telling the story of who those people were. It's like other families' roots run deep and alive, while ours are just dead. DNA testing is revealing more than anyone could have ever predicted, and long-buried family secrets are emerging to the light. When Ancestry revealed the Through Lines tool, a feature that literally connects you via DNA sequencing to your actual lineage, some really hard truths emerged. For instance, my DNA sequence has a curious shift a few generations back. Instead of going directly through my third great grandfather, it detours to his brother. That's right, it appears that my third great uncle was most likely the father of my great great grandfather, making him not my third great uncle, but actually my third great grandfather. Ruh-roh. This, while being obviously weird and curious, doesn't alter our family line too terribly much. Since they shared the same parents, the DNA line just continued past them uninterrupted. And since my third great-grandfather died young, perhaps the brother took the biblical directive to cleave to his brother's widow pretty seriously. I've also found that I have DNA matches on Ancestry, lots of them, and a handful of them share DNA with me from parent A and parent B, meaning somewhere way back, our family trees did overlap slightly. Like somebody married a cousin, okay? It's somewhat amusing now, but it's sobering to even attempt to put myself in the shoes of women in that day and age whose marriages may not have been entirely arranged, but who would have likely been coerced, bullied, or persuaded to marry someone who would prove advantageous to the father, the farmer next door perhaps, who could join forces with the family and expand their land holdings. Well, sobering is putting it lightly. In fact, as I've traced back our family lines, I've been struck by the awareness that I am one of the first women in our lineage to marry a man from another state. Heck, another county was pretty rare. I'd wager many women my age could say the same as our society has become more global and interconnected over the past half century. When you zoom out and look at my family tree, starting in ancient Scotland and Ireland, branching all through the UK and then over the pond into Virginia and then down into North and South Carolina, I see men and women so brave, so hardy, so strong and dedicated that I am frequently rendered speechless by the scraps of stories I can find. A woman who journeyed from the very tippy top of Scotland down through the UK across the Atlantic to Henrico County, Virginia, while pregnant with my 6th great-grandfather. Whew, I am blown away. Those women who carved out homesteads in Virginia, North Carolina, and South Carolina, who fed families of 8, 10, 12, or more with virtually no health care, no maternity care, no support other than the few other women living around them, it blows my mind. And then many of them had to support their households after their husbands and sons were killed in the Civil War. Of course I'm obstinate and stubborn. Of course I'm hardworking and diligent, scrappy and tough, because I come from a line of women who are absolute warriors. But the feeling remains, a restless itch in my spirit. I want to know more. I always want to know more. I knew some of my adopted family's history because of the stories shared around dinner tables after the plates were cleared and coffee was served. Many times the elders would fall into reminiscing about days gone by, the difficulties of the Depression balanced with the unbridled adventure of hopping trains across the country, seeking work and food while seeing the nation. The dutiful honor of growing a victory garden and putting pride into it so yours was the biggest, most bountiful garden on the street. The trick of tanning and then carefully drawing a line up the back of your tan legs with an eyebrow pencil to mimic the seam and color of silk hosiery when none were available due to rationing during World War II. Recipes that include careful measurements of ration products like sugar. Those experiences were hard, but they spoke of them with fondness. They were universally shared by people of that generation, and they shaped them into being the people they became. The individual stories of other, more personal experiences are what makes each family unique. My adoptive grandfather left home with his brother during the Great Depression, so their mother had two fewer mouths to feed, and they hopped trains in search of work. They led this nomadic lifestyle until the historic events at Pearl Harbor when they enlisted in the Army and went off to fight in World War II. My aunt drove the family car through the garage wall into the den when she was learning to drive. My adoptive grandmother told the story standing right in the den where it happened some 40 years later. My uncle was a long-haired hippie who showed up, shirtless save for a leather vest, on a hog to pick up my aunt for their first date, upon which my grandfather promptly shut the door in his face. He came back with a shirt on, and they are still happily married almost 50 years later. Those are the stories most missed by adoptees. I remember listening to my adoptive grandparents, aunts, and uncles reminiscing around that dining table and falling quiet, thinking, this is their history, but it's not mine. And in the 20 years of dutiful searching to find my biological identity, the bearers of all of my family stories died off, one by one, taking with them all of that history. Many of my family members passed away between 2001, when I began searching for them, and 2020, when I finally pieced together my father's identity. In those 20 years, I could have found them, spoken with them, sat at a kitchen table with cups of coffee, and heard the story of my people. I mourn that loss. It was an unnecessary one. There was no reason I couldn't have been given that information when I turned 18 to meet those people and hear our stories. Being denied that opportunity was a glaring example of the hubris most adoptees endure from people who feel they can continue to withhold our identifying information from us, even long after we are legal adults. Paternalistic, demeaning, and downright cruel decisions that cost us, well, everything. Everyone's genealogical past holds some dark shadows. Throughout history, there have been black sheep and bad apples. My fifth great-grandfather was the first sheriff of Graham County, North Carolina. He held this position for all of a year before he was busted for running with a large gang that was counterfeiting money along with other crimes. Hold on, it gets better. Although he was caught red-handed and although he had fought for the Confederacy, he was somehow well-connected enough to receive a presidential pardon for his crimes from none other than President Ulysses S. Grant. What I wouldn't give to hear what the family lore about that man was like. When we strip adoptees of those rights, not only for their childhoods, but for their entire lives, we take from them not only that connection during the formative years, but also the opportunity to become the next link in their family chain of verbal histories, stories, and lore. Effectively, in situations in which adoptees are the last descendants, we cut the chain entirely. My father had a brother who, although he died young in a tragic car accident in 1987, fathered a son before he passed. That son, my cousin, has now had a child, meaning that our Howard family line all comes to rest in that kid. All of the centuries of history, from their humble roots in England, serving at the outskirts of the property of the local lord, to the harbor of Norfolk, which I'm overlooking from my office right now, up the Elizabeth River into Virginia, and then on further to the Appalachian Mountains, down ridgelines to the hollers of western North Carolina and upstate South Carolina. Every hope and promise those hardy men and women put into their pilgrimage, exploration, and homesteading all has trickled down to us. I wish I knew their unwritten stories. I have to accept that I never will. And so I dig. I dig through ancestry, I dig through scraps of papers Xeroxed and scanned into databases, into blurry microfiche, into the ancient last will and testaments, into land deeds, into the scrawled notes on the bottom of documents, into draft cards and census records, to attempt to cobble together the essence of the families that created me. I find stories. Some outlandish, some sad, some impressive, some mundane, stories all told between the lines of documents and official records. It's possible to eke out some of those personal touches. It takes time, a lot of time, and many people don't have the luxury of the time to research their family's genealogical histories. In our culture today, children don't want to sit around the table with grandparents and hear their stories. Perhaps adoption is only a piece of a larger problem, a society that no longer values those unique and inimitable tales, stories of days gone by and people long gone, the lore that weaves together the fabric of our families, our communities, our cultures, and our nations. Perhaps it was easy to sell adoption to a generation that was already fading in their interest in true family cohesion, to a nation so thoroughly industrialized that we began to see our own children as widgets to produce and trade and exchange, and elders as a nuisance that needed to be packed away in retirement villages and nursing homes. I'm beginning to put together a bigger picture, both of my extensive, wild, brave, and bold family tree, and our society as a whole. The turning point for every branch of my family was the advent of the textile mill. It's when most of my ancestors went from being land-holding farmers to renting textile workers. When resources were pulled from rural areas and concentrated heavily in more urban ones, farmers who were barely scraping by had little choice but to sell off what they had and go to work in the mills, almost immediately plunging their families into messy, chaotic, impoverished urban environments. A great-grandfather died of pellagra, a disease of nutritional deficiency, a few short years after relocating to an urban textile mill. After decades of living on a farm, eating fresh produce grown right outside his back door. Farms collapsed during the Great Depression, sold for pennies on the dollar, and land our family had cleared and farmed for two centuries was gone in the blink of an eye. Those farmers and their families had to migrate to cities, forced to work inside smothering, sweltering textile mills from the tender age of 8, their bodies broken, worn, and wounded in the cogs of the machine of industrial progress. A day spent farming meant an evening around the dinner table, talking with family, eating whole fresh foods, and quiet slumber with the crickets and tree frogs playing nature's lullaby. A day spent at the mill meant 12 or more hours of work, scraps of frequently processed canned dinner, sometimes eaten alone as families often worked in shifts, and collapsing into exhausted sleep, a grueling lifestyle that unfortunately led many of my more immediate ancestors to find solace in the bottle. Is it any wonder that exhausted, impoverished parents of that era would even consider, quote, giving away their children? To love them enough to attempt, albeit mistakenly, to spare them a lifetime of what they had endured? The more I research my genealogy, the more fulfilled I feel, and the more somber grief I feel, particularly for the last few generations. Their lives were stripped down to practically nothing, and alcohol and later drugs have played a devastating role in many of my family members' lives. Poverty runs deep in my family lines now. All of the resources, assets, and property we proudly held centuries ago are all gone, tapered down to us, lower middle class, middle-aged Gen X, trying to eke out a place where we can reverse this trend and give our children something. And barring some windfall, a major book deal, a winning lottery ticket perhaps, one of the only things I will be able to pass down to my children with any certainty is their story, our story, the story of the people who came before them and paved the way for them to exist right here, right now. The story of a woman who boarded a wooden ship while pregnant, sailed across the ocean to unknown land, and who birthed that child and then 6 more, children who grew to be the tough, fearless settlers, patriarchs, and matriarchs who forged our family lines. The story of a 5th great-grandfather who became a sheriff with the ill intent of bypassing the legal system for his own criminal enterprise, and instead found out just how robust the justice system already was in those early years of our nation. The story of a 3rd great-grandfather who lived so deep in the mountains of Appalachia that when the Union Army captured him and then offered him parole, he signed it and took off so deep into those woods he wasn't heard from again until the war had ended. The stories of men and women who were unfathomably brave and also humanly flawed, who had entire lives that played out within one county, lives that bore the same weight and importance as ours, and yet have been lost to the sands of time. Those ancestors are what made us who we are. Their fierce dedication runs through our veins. Their compassion and empathy beat in our hearts. Their genes are our genes. Our bright blue eyes reflected in their faces, the noses, the cheekbones, the lips, all signaling that we are of one tribe, one blood, one family. Knowing my ancestral women fought off bears and mountain lions and probably more than their fair share of predatory men as they raised bushels of children scratching life from the red dirt of the hills, why it gives me scores of courage and strength to tackle my life. Knowing I come from strength gives me strength. Knowing I come from courage gives me courage. Knowing I come from tenacity makes me tenacious. Knowing who I am through the lens of who they were gives me power. That is what I want to pass on to my children. That is their inheritance. Their birthright is this story, the story of how they came to be and all the enormous power of humanity that brought us here to this moment. They have boundless potential and the steel of their ancestors undergirding them. They are made of fire and iron, stubborn persistence, and dogged determination. They can do anything they ever want because someone before them has already paved the way. I watch the ceiling fan as I picture the life of a woman who had no central AC, no ceiling fan, no electricity, only the cool mountain air freshening her home as she tried to sleep. I wish I could see a picture, put a face to a name. I want to put frames on their pictures, but I only have the ghost of them, names dug from public records. Sometimes I feel that I can reach out to the past, and my hands pass through this mist. The mist of where my great-grandmother Lula Bell stood in her kitchen and cooked for her family, where my grandmother sat at the table and ate years before she met my grandfather, who had a taste for moonshine and violence, where the oceans of my history lap on the shores of my life, the mist where sailors can be lost in the fog of what is, what isn't, and what we think we see. This is where I shall forever wander, the mist of the unknown. That is the fate of the adoptee, the child given away, the child taken, the family severed. I sleep a fitful slumber, seeing many ghosts in my dreams, the ghost of ancestors both imagined and real. And when I awaken, I have to put the notebook away. I bookmark and then close every tab, all 37 of them, open to various genealogical research websites holding the tiniest crumbs of information about my people. I can't do this often, and yet it's some of my life's most important work. I never really know when the mood will come over me to pick up the threads again and keep weaving, but each time I find more and more information to fill in this tapestry. It's emotionally draining work. It's sometimes amusing work and sometimes sad work. It will be my lifelong pursuit to give my children as complete a picture I can of their history so that they can go in their lives informed, emboldened, and encouraged. It means a lifetime of walking through this mist, never having a real place of my own within it, to plant my children outside of it. It's the only real work of my life that truly does matter. I'm aware that many other people have lost access to their family histories, genealogical records, and that some have never had access to them to begin with. This is a deeply soulful journey and one that I felt compelled to pursue. I've never given up. From the first time I posted in an online forum for adoptees in 2001, seeking my birth parents, all the way through literal decades of combing yearbooks, public records, anything to find them, I did it. I did what many adoptees are never able to do. I found them. I had help from trusted friends, and without them, some of those final pieces would have never fallen into place, but all the work that led up to that was me. I stole moments. Through grueling years of being a single working mom to three kids, I would stay up some night until the wee hours combing online records. I kept notebooks and folders, and then in my Google Drive, when that became a thing. Threads, I thought of them. Just threads. I had this unshakable belief that one day those threads would lead to something real. And they did. My mother now lives down the hall from me in her own beautiful bedroom, and we eat dinner together every day. I and my mother are proof that magic exists, that miracles happen, and if you are dogged and determined enough, you can accomplish anything. But I am well aware that many other adoptees simply didn't have the option, and I mourn for them, for I know all too well that feeling. that big, gaping darkness that sometimes threatens to swallow you on Mother's Day or Father's Day or holidays, or just any random day when it strikes you like a bolt of lightning that you are adrift in the sea of humanity while surrounded by nothing but whole anchored family units. It can be massively depressing, and there's really no cure for it. We live in a digital and technological age, however, that has broken enormous barriers to genealogical connection. DNA testing has changed the game. I encourage all adoptees to spit in that tube, mail it in, and just see if there are any connections that appear. Whether or not you pursue those connections is up to you, but I can almost positively affirm that it will help heal you, just seeing those results. Thank you all for joining me for another episode. I highly encourage you to check out my website, melissacorrigan.com. I have a link to my guided journal. If you are an adoptee and perhaps thinking of setting off onto this journey, consider picking up the guided journal and getting into the best possible headspace as you begin the venture. You can also check out my advocacy page for resources on advocating for the abolishment of adoption and instituting legal guardianship in its stead. That's it for now, and I hope you'll tune in next week.